Okay, we're starting here, 10 lines down on Vav Amud Aleph. The Braita begins, Tanur Banan, Motza Svatecha. Again, we're going to quote an entire Pasuk, but they're going to parse the Pasuk in order to darshan from piece by piece, which is Motza Svatecha, Zu Mitzvatasei. This is a positive commandment. Tishmor, you must keep. Zu Mitzvat Lotase. This is a negative precept. Ve'asita, you must do. Azhara the Beit Din Shiasucha. That is a requirement upon Beit Din. It's a charge to Beit Din to ensure that you do what you're supposed to do. Kasher Nadarta. As you had vowed. Zeneder. That's a neder. Lashem Elokecha. What is the neder Lashem Elokecha? Elu. Chataot. Vashamot. Olot. Ushlamim. So these are all items that are Lashem Elokecha. Chataot. Vashamot. Olot. Ushlamim. Nidava. Kimashmo, that's literally like what it says. Asher dibarto, that you spoke, that you said, is elu kodshe berek abayit. Beficha, zutztaka. Asher dibarto means that you've spoken, meaning that you've given a commitment to do something. So that commitment was to berek abayit. And then, beficha, zutztaka. And with your mouth that you've committed yourself, that is tztaka. So here, Gemara is going to go back now and look at piece by piece about the Braita that we just quoted. We quoted an entire pasuk, and they broke down the pasuk and darshan from each piece of it what the reference is here in terms of keeping what you say. Motas vatecha tishmor vasita. You have to do what you said you're going to do. So what is that referencing? So here the Braita again gave us different component parts which you have to keep. Neder, nitava, the korbanot, the berak habayit, and staka. Amamar, motas vatecha, zu mitzvah tasei. So Gemara says, lamali. What do I need a mitzvah to say for? I already have a mitzvah to say that we learned from earlier in Sefer Devarim, which is Uvata Shama Veveitim Shama. That was Rabbi Meir's source before. That's when you come up there, you have to bring that which is that you're obligated to bring. So Umivata Shama Veveitim Shama Nafko. That we already learned out from the same pasuk that Rabbi Meir used, which is that once you go up to your Shalim, you have to bring what you are obligated to bring. Tishmor. And again, we learn from Tishmor that you have a negative precept if you do not keep what you said. So again, lamali, what do I need it for? Belote acher l'shalmo nafka. You already have that from balta acher. You have a negative precept that tells you that if you tarry in bringing up or carrying out your neder, that you are held accountable for that. Ve'asita, azarada beitin she'asucha. Again, lamali. That requirement or charge to Beit Din that they force you to do what you were supposed to do. Why do we need that? Mi yakrivoto nafka. We already have that from the term yakrivoto, the Tanya. This we didn't have before, so the Gemara will bring the information for us, which is we have a bright yakrivoto, that he must bring his korban. Milameid shikofinoto, that you force him to bring it. Yakrivoto is that we force him to be makriv it. Yachol ba'al korcho, you would think you could force him to the point where he has to do it against his will. Tamad lomar lirtzono, he has to do it willingly. So how do you force someone to do something willingly? Haketzav, kofin oto ad shomer rotzani. You whip him, you press him until he says, I want to do it. So what type of coercion is this, that now this is his willing offering of the korban? So the Rambam has a famous formulation of this. That deep down a person wants to do the right thing. His neshama, his nefesh are in line with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And so he does want to do the right thing. But whether it's the Yetzara, whether it's his Gashmi side of him, prevents him from doing this. So by hitting him, by whipping him, we're just realigning what he really wants to do, his neshama with the Kaddish Baruch Hu, removing the impediments between him carrying out the activity that he should be doing. We do that through kofinoto. We press him to do it. So that's how we get to a coercion that really turns out to be a willing expression of what you really want to do. That's how the Rambam formulates it in the Mishnah Torah. So Gemara says we have three limudim here out of this pasuk. All three of those limudim we had prior. So why do I need them at all? So Gemara says chad da'amar velo afrish, v'chad da'afrish velo akriv. There are two different stages in the problems of Baal Ta'acher. One is where you make a commitment, but you haven't done anything about the commitment. The other one is that you made the commitment, We were mafrish the korban, velo akriv, and you didn't bring it yet. Vitzricha, we need both of these instances. Diashminyan amar velo afrish. If we only talked about the instance where he stipulated he will do something, he committed to do something, velo afrish, and he didn't do anything about it, he's done absolutely nothing. Shum delo kaimai le dibure. Because there he didn't keep his word at all. Velo afrish, velo ikriv, if he already was separated out the korban, but he didn't bring it up, he didn't actually execute on that. You can say that wherever it is, it's in the hands of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We have this principle in general by Kodshim, especially Kodshei Berek Abayit, Hekdesh can take possession of something anywhere, because Hekdesh, in a sense, is everywhere. That's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So if you believe that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is everywhere, then Hashem's already received that which you've separated out. It works much better for things like tzedakah and bedek abayit. With korbanot themselves, it's a little harder because you really have to bring those up to the mikdash. But we have to say in some form, the fact that you've already separated out means that a Kodesh Baruch Hu has received it. Therefore, tzricha, I need that instance. V'yashminen ifrish velo ikriv. If you only told me about a case where he separated out the korban or the item velo ikriv and he didn't bring it yet, tika mishay legabei, that he is tearing or he keeps it by him. Aval amar velo ifrish, if he said something and then he didn't do anything about it, ema dibura lo klomo, let's just say that his speech means nothing. In a case where he took action and then he tarries to bring it up, over there we're going to hold him accountable. The other case, he just said some words. Are we going to hold him accountable for that? So tricha, the answer is yes, we are going to hold him accountable for that. So in both cases, there's a havamina to say that you're more culpable. So we have both cases because there's a chiddush in each side. One chiddush is that amira is enough to make you culpable. The other case is that the fact that you've separated out is not sufficient to discharge your obligation or to free you of culpability. And you're still culpable even after you've separated it out. Umi matzit amart dama velo ifrish. Is there a possibility of saying that there was a case where he made the commitment but did not separate it out? V'ha nidavak tiva. Problem is, in the drasha of the Braita, it says one of the objects there is a nidava. Now the difference between a ned and a nidava, which we're about to bring a Mishnah for, makes it that you've already separated by definition the object out. Titnan, ezehu neder, what is the definition of a neder? Ha'omer, harei alai ola, the person commits to bring an ola. Here, the obligation is upon the individual. He commits himself to provide an ola. Bezuhu nidava. What's the definition of nidava? Haomer harezu ola. He says that this animal will be an ola. Ma ben neder the nidava. What is the difference between taking a neder and a nidava? In the case of a neder, mate onignav, it dies or it's stolen, chayav biachriuto. He's responsible for its warranty or its replacement, because he committed himself to bring the korban. Just because he separated out the korban, he has yet to discharge the obligation, because the obligation devolves upon the individual himself. And until he's brought the korban, he has not discharged that obligation, even if he separates out the animal. On the other hand, the dava, meito nigneva, the animal dies or is stolen, eino chayav achriuta. He is not chayav to replace it or to warranty it, because he only committed this animal. He didn't commit himself, he just committed that animal. But what you see from here is that a nidava is a designation of a particular animal. So if you're going to tell me that this pasuk is talking about a case of amar velo hifrish, he made a commitment and didn't separate out any animal, a nidava by definition is a case where you separated out the animal because you designated the animal. Amarova mishkachat lakigon, the amar harei alai ola, Amanat she'ini chayav achriuta. He basically placed a condition. He made a neder into a nidava. She says that, harei alai ola, on condition that I do not have to warranty it, I don't have to replace it. So again, the obligation is upon him. So to discharge the obligation, he has to bring the korban. But he freed himself of this continuous obligation because he says, once I pick the animal, I won't have to warranty the animal. So it was a neder that looks like a nidava. It's not really a nidava because he didn't pick the animal yet. But it will function like a netavah because you won't have to warranty the animal. So that's what the pasuk is speaking about. That's where he's culpable. Exactly. That's the netavah. This pasuk is a case where he never picks the animal. We're going to hold him responsible for that. So beficha, the Braita said, that means staka. Now we're going to have a number of statements of Rava. Rava is going to qualify the different components of Baal Te'acher. Here it's about staka. Later it's about the asay and the lo ta'asay. Amar Rava. Utztaka michayev ala la'altar. Staka, you are responsible right away. So as opposed to the Braita that we saw prior to this, where the regards to Baal Te'acher, depending on the opinion, you get one regal, two regalim, three regalim, three regalim in order. When it comes to the tztaka, you're responsible right away. You're in violation of Baal Te'acher if you don't give the tztaka immediately. My taima, the ha'kai me aniyim. What's the reason? Because the aniyim are present. They're there. The assumption of the Gemara is very interesting here, is that in order to discharge your obligation with regard to a korban or anything that's to do with Kodesh, we're not going to obligate you to go more than you are required to go up to Yerushalayim. You have to go up to Yerushalayim for the three regalim. So it has to be associated or correlated with the times or instances where you're going to go up to Yerushalayim. How many times? That's the question of the limud and the psukim. But the Gemara doesn't assume just because you made a neder that you have to trek up to Yerushalayim immediately. We understand that you're not going to be there, or you will go there at the next regal. That was the underlying assumption. We're not going to burden people with going up to Yerushalayim. It's true, if you lived in Yerushalayim, maybe it should be different. The Gemara doesn't mention that, but it could be possible that you would look at it in the same way. But here, where you're talking about aniyim, and the availability of aniyim is to discharge it immediately because they are present. Over there, we're going to require you to discharge the obligation immediately because there's no extra effort on your part to do it right away. So Gemara says, pshita. That's obvious. Since it's within the context of korbanot, ad avri ala gimel regalim ke korbanot. Because it's pasuk is learned in the context of Baal Te'acher with korbanot, so maybe you would think it has the same din as korbanot. Kamashvalan, that is not the case. The hotam who titalinu rachmanu b'regalim. Over there, the pasuk directly connected it with the regal. Over here, no, because the ha shchichei aniyim. Because over here, the aniyim are readily available. So because the aniyim are present, therefore we expect you to give the commitment to the aniyim right away. Now, as far as the aniyim are concerned, if you look up the halacha in Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, he also says miyad. He uses the term immediately, does not define what the term immediately is. I'm assuming it's the same din as the regel. Means, when do you regularly pogesh aniyim? When do you really regularly come into contact, or are there aniyim that need? So the need of aniyim over here are aniyim who require immediate assistance. These are aniyim whose next meal is dependent on the distribution. So when we say that there are aniyim present, you have to have those types of aniyim who are depending on distributions immediately, and therefore you have to give it immediately. So if they provide the aniyim at a certain time every day, or they provide their meals three times a day, whatever that is, you have to get the money there in time for that to be discharged. Yes. The Mishnayot, there is a definition of an ani. In Peah, if you have matayim zuz, 200 zuz, which is enough money for you to live for a year, then you're not classified as an ani. In order to take from the tamchui, one is only entitled to take from the tamchui if he doesn't have sufficient money to eat more than two meals, I think is the definition that's given in the Mishnah. Which seems to be the ani that the Shulchan Aruch is speaking about, because he's someone who depends on the handout. Which makes it actually very hard for Maiser ani. When you separate Maiser ani, it's very hard to actually get it to the right aniyim. Sometimes kedai to give Maiser ani to Karen aniyim or something that specifically works with this, because there's only a certain type of ani that discharges your obligation with regards to Maiser ani. So there, the Mishnah talks about if you're traveling, you might actually take on the properties of an ani, but in their time, where you have no possessions, and you have no money, and you're dependent on the handouts, then you might be in the same category as an ani in that case. Even if you have lots of money at home, or you have a liquid assets, where you don't have anything liquid to work with, that you also might take on the property of an ani. But here, aniyim, the Shulchan Aruch defines as people who are require the next meal or require a handout in order to eat at this point in time. So if they're readily available, then it's obligated. We saw Tosafot earlier who says that you're only in violation of Baal Te'acher, the Radosavot differentiated and said, the obligation is immediate when the Aniyim are there. When the Aniyim are not there, then you fall into the regular cycle of Baal Te'acher, which is, you can wait 3 regalim until an Ani shows up. If an Ani doesn't show up after 3 regalim, you gotta go find the Ani. We give you time to find the Ani if the Ani is not readily available. But there's a certain point where we put an end to that and say, no more, and you're in violation of Baal Te'acher. That's what the Tosafot said. Again, there's a difference, Tosafot said, between a Gabai and to him himself. Tosafot said that if you tell it to the Gabai, then you have an issue of Baal Te'acher. But if you only speak between you and yourself about the neder, then the neder never takes on the property of Baal Te'acher. Although the Rama over there suggests that you have to tell the Gabai that you committed to do it, and that actually will probably bring you into a problem of Baal Te'acher afterwards. So here, the discharging of the obligation of giving to the Aniyim is because they're readily available. If they are not readily available, then it turns into the same thing as a Korban, which is we give you time to figure it out. But we don't give you endless time, we give you a certain amount of time to discharge that obligation. Amar Rava. So we have another statement here by Rava, which is, Kevin Shavar Lav Regel Echad Over Basse. So Rava now bifurcates the din between the assay and the lot assay. He says, you have an assay immediately to discharge the obligation or to execute on what you committed to do. That is, the first regel, you show up in Yerushalayim, then you're in violation of the assay if you don't do it immediately. As far as the lot assay is concerned, we'll see in a second, that you have the Baal Te'acher. There you have the 3 regalim in order to be in violation of that. That'll be Rava's next statement. As far as lechatchila, we expect you to bring it on the first regal. The first time you go up to Shalim, you should take care of it. So meitevei heid Rabbi Yoshua v'Rabbi Pipius al vlad shlamim shikarev shlamim. That an offspring of a shlamim is brought as a shlamim. Amar Rabbi Pipius, ani meid shaita lanu parashal zivchei shlamim. We had this cow that was brought as a shlamim. We ate that on Pesach. And then we ate its offspring as a shlamim on the chag. I understand why on Pesach they did not bring the korban of the vlad. It was lacking in the appropriate time. The appropriate time here is that a korban cannot be brought in the first 7 days of its life. Only 8 days and on is an animal qualified to be brought as a korban. So if the baby was born right before Pesach or on Pesach itself, they wouldn't have qualified on the regel. So I understand why they didn't bring it on Pesach together with its mother, because it wasn't the time yet. They didn't have a right to bring the korban. Ella vlado be'atzeret hecha mishayla v'avri alei be'asei. How could it be that they didn't bring it on Shavuot and not violate the assay? If Rav is right, there's an assay immediately at the next regal. It's clear by atzeret, by Shavuot, that he is old enough in order to be brought as a korban. So how could they tarry and not bring it on Shavuot and bring it a Chag? Chag refers to Sukkot. So why do they wait until Sukkot? So Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derova, Kagon Shaya Chole Be'atzeret. The child was sick on Shavuot, which is Pasul the Akrava. That's why they couldn't bring it. That's why they waited until Sukkot. It still wasn't qualified. It wasn't old enough at Pesach. It wasn't well enough at Atzeret on Shavuot. And by the time Sukkot came around, they were able to bring it. Ravashi Amar Mai Bachalnu Vlada Shlamim Bachag. What does it mean that they ate the Shlamim on the Chag? Bachag, Diktani Chag HaShavuot. The Chag that's written here means Shavuot and not Sukkot. Now the standard term Chag is only used by Sukkot. Here he's suggesting it's used by Shavuot. Vidach, of course, why didn't Rav Zvid accept that position of Ravashi is because of this. Kohecha Diktani Pesach Tani Atzeret. Anytime you're speaking about Pesach together with the Shavuot, the way that it's termed in the Mishnah, the Braita, is Pesach and Atzeret. Atzeret is a terminology that was invented by the Chachamim for Shavuot. Shavuot in the Torah is never known as Atzeret. It's a term that the Chachamim used for Shavuot, obviously drawing the parallel between Shmini Atzeret relative to Sukkot, so too is Shavuot relative to Pesach, and the Ramban al-Torah brings that as a beautiful explanation and says that the Me'as Sfirah, Chol HaMoed, the equivalent of Chol HaMoed, for Pesach, between Pesach and the Atzeret of Shavuot, similar to the Shmini Atzeret and Sukkot. So this terminology is not Chag, it's Atzeret for Shavuot in the context of Pesach. So to say Pesach and then Chag, that usually means Sukkot, and that's why Rav Zvid did not accept the answer that Rav Ashi is proposing over here. Amar Rava, Vamar Rava, here is the last amen of Rava, which is, Kevan Shabru Alav Gimel Regalim B'chol Yom V'Yom Uver B'Val Tacher. Once you have passed three regalim, then you're in violation of Baal Tacher. But not only are you in violation of Baal Tacher, you're in violation of Baal Tacher every day. It's not just one lav that you're in violation of Baal Tacher, but it's one of these, we'll call mitzvot midiot. It's a continuous, constant mitzvah, similar to other mitzvot that we have, like Avat Hashem, Yirat Hashem, certain things that you can do all the time, and that are constantly there. So to hear this Baal Tacher, as long as you do not bring the Qurbana up, you are in continuous violation of this mitzvah. It's not just one violation. I mean, you could have thought, okay, I'm in violation of it, and then I'll wait for the next regal. Right? It's like when you have the book is overdue in the library. You say, you know what, it's overdue already, so I'll keep it another week. What they do is they fine you each day, and the fine gets bigger and bigger, so they incent you not to say that. So the same thing here. That's the same idea here. That Baal Tacher doesn't mean, okay, I'm already overdue, just let it go. You're overdue, and that overdue is going to result in a violation each day to encourage you to take care of this issue. Meitve, echad b'chor, v'chad kol ha-kodashim, b'chor and all the kodashim, kevin shavru alehem shana below regalim, if you passed a year without three regalim, or regalim below shana, or three regalim without a year, over b'baal tacher. So there are two ways to violate baal tacher. One is to have it a year pass by, the other one is to pass through three regalim. So the Gemara says, what's the question? We don't see a question here. Here all of a sudden they brought this up as a meitave, that this breita is a problem for the statement of Rava, and the Gemara says, I don't know, but how am I to yufte? What type of question is this? I'm not sure what the question is from the breita. So I'm Rav Kahana, man de kamotiv, shaper kamotiv. This question is a proper question, or there is something wrong here, which is, michte, tana alave kamahader. The Tana is trying to figure out how many ways you can violate Baal Tacher. So he says, well, if you pass a year, you're in violation. You pass three regalim, you're in violation. Litnei b'chol yom v'yom over b'Baal Tacher. He's trying to search how many ways you can violate it, then every day is also a violation. Why doesn't he mention that? V'idach, the other position who says, I don't understand the question, says, Tana l'mikvei b'lav kamahader. B'lav yitere lo kamahader. He's not trying to figure out how many times you're violating Baal Tacher. He's just trying to figure out how many manifestations of Baal Tacher there are. You can violate it this way, you can violate it that way. He's not trying to figure out, once you violate it, how many violations you have. He's simply trying to find the triggers for Baal Tacher. That's a different type of enumeration or quantification than counting up how many Baal Tachers you are in violation of. So that's why it's not really a question. So Gemara says, Gufa, Echad Bechor, Vechad Kol HaKodeshim. The reason that the Breita separates out Bechor is because the limud of Baal Tacher of a year is learned out of a Bechor. By Bechor it says, Shana B'Shana, it says each year, and from there we learn that there's a requirement to bring the Bechor within its year. From there, we extrapolate to other Kodeshim. So that's why Bechor is relegated or separated out from the rest of Kodashim. Truth is, the din is the same amongst all Kodashim. So, Kevin Shavru Alehem Shana below Regalim, Regalim below Shana, Over Beval Tacher. Bishlam or Regalim below Shana Mishkachala. It's easy to figure out how you're in violation of three Regalim without coming to a full year. If you have the Nether taken right before Pesach, then by the end of Sukkot, you're already in violation of Baal Tacher, and you have not completed a year. We can find a manifestation of that. How is it possible to complete an entire year and not pass through three regalim? That's the definition of a year. A year will automatically pass by three regalim. Now, if you are Rabbi Shimon, that's not a problem, because anicha lamanda ite kesidran mishkachla. According to Rabbi Shimon, where you're only in violation of Baal Tacher if you go through three regalim in order, then it's easy to find that. You take a neder for Shavuot, you take a neder before a Sukkot, then you would easily be over a year. Therefore, you'll violate it when you cross over a year before you get to three regalim. According to one who says you don't have to be in order, that means both according to one who says you don't need them in order, how do you have an instance of Shana without crossing over the regalim? According to Rabbi, we could find it in a leap year. Titanyo, we have a braita that deals with what we read in last week's parsha, which is if you sell a house in a walled city, you have 1 year to redeem it from the day that you sell it. Once the year has gone by, it becomes a permanent sale and it cannot be reversed. It doesn't go back in the ovel. It's one of the few items that you can sell on a permanent basis. That's a house within a walled city. It says, Shanat Mima. You have 1 whole year to redeem it. So what is a Shanat Mima? Rabbi Omer Moneg Gimel Meot Kushishim Chamisha Yom Kiminyan Yimot HaChama. You count 365 days. That is a solar year. And then it's done. So you get a year. What's a year? A year is 365 days. Chachamim Amim Moneg Yud Bet Chodesh Miyom Neyom. You count 12 months from day to day. Meaning that if it's on the 5th of Nisan, then you come back to the 5th of Nisan. Now, if it's a leap year, it's to his benefit. Then he gets 13 months. If it's a regular year, he only gets 354 days. What Rabbi is saying is that the average year that is generated by the Jewish calendar is 365 days. We run by a lunar calendar, but we adjust the lunar calendar to match up with the solar calendar. So over a 19-year cycle in which we even out, then the average year in the Jewish calendar is 365 days. Some of them will be less, some of them will be more, but on average, you have 365 days. As a Mamar Muska, this does have a nafkamina in terms of birthdays. It might make more sense if you are counting your age to celebrate your secular birthday versus celebrating your Hebrew birthday. Your Hebrew birthday is not really incorporating your age. Now, halachically, of course, your bar mitzvah is on the day that you halachically reach that day. But in terms of your age, on average, the year is 365 days. So if you want to properly count your age, then you should maybe track it according to your secular birthday and not according to your Hebrew birthday, your Jewish calendar birthday, because you move around. Your years are then different lengths each year, not the consistent length. If you want a consistent measure of your age, your secular birthday is a better measure of your age. That's just a Mamar Muskar about that position of Rabbi. Now, the Chachamim say, no, that everything goes by the lunar calendar. It's just a dating on the lunar calendar. So now, according to Rabbi, Mishkakala the Rabbi, the Akdasha Batar Chagamatzot, you made it Kodesh, meaning that you made the nether right after Pesach. Techi Mati Shile Adar Batra, in that instance, once you reach the latter Adar, I mean, this is a leap year, so it's the end of the second Adar, Shana Malio, you finished up a year, Regalim Lo Malo, but the Regalim you did not complete. So in a lunar leap year, you take 354 days, you add on another month, which is 29 days, so you end up with 383 days in the year. A solar year is only 365 days. So in that case, you have 18 extra days in excess of the lunar year. Those 18 extra days can actually create this issue, which is, you can actually take a neder after Pesach, or it's really at the tail end of Pesach or during Pesach, and then in the subsequent year, 18 days before you reach Pesach, your year is complete, and yet you haven't crossed over three regalim. Gemara says, according to Rabbi, we can find an instance like this where you'll finish the year and you won't finish three regalim. Rashi points out, either you did it betoch regel. He says, some people say after the regal, literally like the Gemara says, and when they say the end of Adar, they don't really mean the end of Adar Sheni, they mean just the beginning of Nisan. Either way, you'll be within 18 days of the previous year, so you just have to make sure within 18 days it doesn't cross over that final regal. Elo Rabbanan, Eicha Mishkachala. According to the Rabbanan, how do you have a case where you have a year pass, and you haven't crossed over three regalim? They say it's about the date. It's all about the date. Then by definition, if you take the neder now, you're going to cross three regalim by the time you get to the year or next year. Ketani Rav Shemayo, Atzeret, Piamim Behei, Piamim Shisha, Piamim Shiva. Shavuot can fall out sometimes on the 5th of Sivan, sometimes on the 6th of Sivan, and sometimes on the 7th of Sivan. Ha, Ketzad, how is that possible? Shnehen Mele'in. If both Nisan and Iyar are Malay, meaning they're 30-day months, then Chamisha, it falls out on the 5th of Sivan. Shneim Chaserim, if both Nisan and Iyar are Chaser, they're both 29 days. Shiva, it will fall out on the 7th of Sivan. Echad Malay v'Echad Chaser, if one is Malay and one is Chaser, then it will fall out on Shisha. It will always fall out on the 6th. Today, our calendar is fixed, where Nisan is always Malay, and a yar is always chaser. Therefore, 49 days after Pesach, when you count, will always fall out on the 6th of Sivan. If you were to change that, and the months were flexible, meaning either both could be chaser, both could be malay, it would actually shift the calendrical date. Because even though it's a fixed 49 days, the number of days incorporated in the months between the second day of Pesach, the 16th of Nisan, and where the 49 days end will actually differ because the length of the month. If Nisan's shorter or longer, that does impact where the 49 days lands. So it can fall out, if you have a flexible calendar like that, it can fall out on the 5th, 6th, or the 7th. So now what did he do? The 5th was Shavuot. In that year, it was on the 5th of Sivan, he took his netter on the 6th of Sivan. The 6th, he takes his netter. The day after Shavuot, he takes his netter on the 6th. Then in the subsequent year, Shavuot falls out on the 7th. So when he hits the 6th of Sivan, his year is complete, but he hasn't run over Shavuot yet. And so therefore he has a year without three regalim because of that adjustment. Uman Tano de Pali Galei de Rav Shmaya, who is a Tano that argues on Rav Shmaya that Shavuot doesn't move. That it can be only on the 6th of Sivan, not the 5th, 6th, or 7th. That's Achirim here. Achirim, who we bumped into before. Jitanya, Achirim Omrim, Ein Bein Atzeret Atzeret. The distance in time between one Shavuot and the subsequent Shavuot, and Ein Bein Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah, or the difference between Rosh Hashanah Rosh Hashanah, Eladal Yamim Bilvad. It's not talking about 4 days, it's talking about 4 weekdays. The day of the week in which it will fall out. That is because a lunar year is 354 days. 350 is divisible by 7, so those are complete weeks. In addition to that, you have 4 days. So each year, you're going to move on the calendar 4 days, days of the week. The difference between 1 year to the next will be in when the holiday falls out in a regular year. In Maitashanu Milberet, Kamisha. In a leap year, you'll have a 5-day difference. Because a leap year, we add an additional month of 29 days. 29, 28 of the days are 4 complete weeks. Plus an extra day. So the 4 regular days that you have from a normal year of the 354, plus one more day, gives you 5-day difference, 5-weekday difference, in a Shana Me'uberet. So that's the designation according to Achirim. But what you see from Achirim is that they always have a fixed number of Malay and Chaser. The Achirim's principle is basically you have alternating months of Malay, Chaser, which is actually how our calendar works. Our calendar works on a basis of Malay Chaser, Malay Chaser, Malay Chaser. And that's why our Shavuot always falls out on the 6th of Sivan, because Nisan is always Malay, and Iyar is always Chaser. It happens to be in our calendar that we do have 2 flexible months, which are, we have the month of Cheshvan, and the month of Kislev, that are both flexible. And their normal year, you would have one be Malay, and one be Chaser. But in certain years, you're going to have them both be Chaser and both be Malay. That's when we're trying to adjust the calendar to avoid Rosh Hashanah falling out Lo Ad Rosh. We don't want Rosh Hashanah falling out on Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. In order to adjust that and some other things that we adjust for in the calendar, we use those months as flexible in order to change it. So the Achirim is not even true for us because it really depends on the year. Happens to be this year that we're in currently, Tavshin Ayin Dalet, is the longest year possible in a Jewish year that you could have. It is both a leap year, and both Cheshvan and Kislev were Malayim. So it's the longest possible year that you can have in the Jewish calendar because of that. Because we used everything. We used the extra leap year, plus we used both flexible months as being Malay. They were both 30-day months. All right, so now, Pesach say that it never flexes, it never moves. So according to Rav Shmaya, according to the Rabbanon, you could have a case where you could have a year pass and not cover the 3 regalim. So now, by Rabbi Zero. You know, we have a series of questions from Rabbi Zera. One is, Yoresh, Ma'u Babal Te'acher. A person who inherits a animal that was consecrated to be a korban, what's his din with regards to Baal Te'acher? Ki Tidor Neder, Amar Rachmana, V'halo Nadar. Baal Te'acher only applies to the one who takes the Neder, because it says, Ki Tidor Neder. When you make a commitment, you take a Neder, then, Lo Te'acher L'Shalomo. Don't tarry in carrying out the commitment that you've made. Odilma, or maybe Uvata Shama Beitim Shama V'chamechayev. Or maybe because he does go up there, he goes up to the regel, and when you go up to the regel, you have to bring up that which you have that belongs to Hashem. So Tashma, Detani Rabbi Chia Meimach. So that is a drusha that we dealt with yesterday in the pasuk of Ki Tidor Neder. The final word in that pasuk is Ki Darosh Yidrusheno Hashem Elokecha Meimach. From there we darshened out that was Leket Shichan Peyah Meimach. Now he's suggesting that Meimach Prat LeYoresh, that Ki Tidor Neder, that Lo Te'acher only applies to Meimach. from you, to the exclusion of the Yoresh. V'amimach v'ilei ze leket shechampeya. As I mentioned, we just used that in the Brayta yesterday to teach you that leket shechampeya is a din of bal ta'acher. Where it says, kari be'imach v'kari be'imach. There's two drashot that can be learned here. Imach teaches you leket shechampeya. Me'imach means from you and not from anyone else. So the extra mem teaches you that. So the first way we answered, we assumed that just because the asay applies to the yoresh, so do the lot asay should apply to the yoresh. In the second, or the final answer, we say no, that we have an exclusion, that the yoresh is not held culpable for lot te'acher l'shalmo, because there's an exclusion in that pasuk that says only the individual who took the neder is responsible, not the yoresh. Okay, next question from Rabbi Zera. By Rabbi Zera, isha mahi b'bal te'acher. A woman, what is the din of bal te'acher with regards to her? Mi amrinan ha lo michayva biri'ya. Since she is not obligated to bring up olot ri'iya, because there it says, kol zechurcha, all your males have to bring up the ri'iya to appear in the mikdash. So since she's not obligated to come up to bring her olot ri'iya, which means that she's not obligated to go up for the regel, in that case, how can you say she's in violation of bal te'acher? The whole idea of bal te'acher is because you're there, we expect you to discharge your obligation. But since she doesn't have to be there, maybe she doesn't have to discharge it. Oh, dima ha ita besimcha. Even though she's not obligated in olot riyah, she does have participation in the shalmei simcha that you bring on Yom Tov. So she does participate in that, and that maybe requires her to bring up her neder. Amar le'abaye, but typically, da ita besimcha. He says, why don't we say that? It seems to be that that would be the reason to believe that she is obligated because she's a part and parcel of the simcha. It says, mi amar abaye hochi? Would Abaye really come to that conclusion? Ba'amar Abaye, isha ba'ala misamcha. A woman, her husband, is required to be misameach. The Devarav, the Rabbi Zeira Kamar, he says, according to me, I don't hold that the woman is obligated in simcha. Rather, it's the husband's obligation to ensure that she has simcha. So according to me, it's not a question that the woman doesn't have a violation of bal te'acher, because she has no reason to be up there, or nothing compelling her to be up there. On the other hand, according to you, Rabbi Zeru, who seems to think that there is a din of simcha, according to you, then yes, if she has to be up there because of the simcha, then she should be obligated in bal te'acher. Now Rashi says, ba'ala misamcha, Rashi is interesting, bebavel, bebigdei tzivonim, beretz Yisrael, bebigdei pitshtana meguhatzin. Rashi says, when it says Ba'al Misamcha, that means that there are other ways to be Misamech, his wife, besides a korban. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us that in Bavel they used to give them colored clothing, and Eretz Yisrael they used to give them pishtan, linen clothing. Obviously the heat or whatever it was, they gave them lighter clothing, they gave them what was considered to be special clothing in that location. What Rashi is pointing out is, since there's a way to discharge the obligation of simcha outside of the korbanot, the woman's not obligated to be there. She's not a participant in simcha in the sense of korbanot. Tosafot says that he doesn't think that's right. The Rabbeinu Tam asks a question right away. That which Rashi quoted is bizman hazeh, when there are no korbanot. How do you do simchat yom tov? How do you accomplish the mitzvah simchat yom tov? So there the Gemara is telling you, buy new clothing, buy new jewelry. You do things that will be misameach or outside of korbanot. But bizman ha-migdash, the only simcha is ein simcha elah b'basar. And basar shel shlamim. The only simcha is basar shlamim. So Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam. So Rabbeinu Tam in the end says, the answer to this question about bala misamcha is, bala misamcha shechiyuv al bala velo alea. That the requirement of simcha devolves upon the husband and not on the wife. Lafikach lo gerinan ba uvata shama. Therefore we don't call it as if she's going there. Even though the simcha that has to be provided to her is through a korban shlamim, nevertheless the obligation to provide her with the shlamim is the husband. She doesn't have an obligation to be besimcha through korban shlamim. The husband has an obligation to ensure that she is besimcha through a shlamim. So because of that, we don't say that ubat shama veitim shama, that she has this obligation to be there, therefore she has to bring it up. So that's how the Rabbeinu Tam explains why there is no obligation on the woman about te'acher, because there is really no obligation for her to be up there according to Abaye. It's not because it's not through a shlamim, it is through a shlamim, but it's just not her obligation. It's her husband's obligation to make her, bring her to a point of simcha. So he does say, or he does mention, Tosafot mentions it here, we mentioned in Sukkah as well, where there the Gemara says that there are 8 days of Simcha. You can't bring a Shlamim every day. Can't bring a shlamim every day because if Shabbat falls out during the regel. So if you can't bring a shlamim during the regel, then you can't have simchat bebasar every day. Where it says, no, because the shlamim lasts for 2 days. So you bring it on Erev Shabbat, that's Chol HaMoed, you would have it. The Gemara says the one exception is on the first day of Yom Tov. First day of Yom Tov, if it falls out on Shabbat, you have a problem. First day of Yom Tov falls out on Shabbat, we said in the Gemara that you can only have Shalmei Simcha that were shechted on Yom Tov itself. The Shechita has to be Bizman HaSimcha. So when you shecht them before Sukkot, it won't help you. If you can't shecht it on the first day of Yom Tov, go and shecht it on the second day. So then you're stuck on the first day of Yom Tov that falls out on Shabbat. You can't bring Shlamim, so then what's the din of Simcha? Over there kicks in the dinim that we have, Bizman HaZeh, which is there are other ways to get to Simcha, like buying clothing and jewelry and all these other things that you do. So even Bizman HaMikdash, there are manifestations of Simcha that are not through Basar, on days where it won't work. I mean, that when it's impossible to create the Simcha through a Korban. But otherwise, if it's during the regel and you can do it through Basar Shlamim, the obligation is through Basar Shlamim. Right now, next question. When does the Bechor Shana begin? The count for the Bechor Shana, when does that begin? Abaya Amar Misha Shenolad, on the David's birth. V'achar Yaakov Amar Misha Shenir'ah Lahar Tza'ah. Only it becomes ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach. So if a Bechor is born, then from day one, Abaya says you start counting its year. Along comes Rav Achar Bar Yaakov and says, wait a minute, day one it can't go on the Mizbeach. It's only ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach on its eighth day. So its year, its expiry, should be counted from the day that it was ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach. What day is it ra'ui to go on the Mizbeach? The eighth day. So from that will be the start of its count for a year. Below plige. Gemara says they don't argue. Habatam. It makes a difference whether the Bechor is a Balmum or a Tam. Bechor Balmum won't go on the Mizbeach. It's eaten by the Kohen as Chulin, quasi-Chulin. So therefore, from day one, it is Ra'oi. Whereas for a Korban, you have to wait 8 days. So Rav Achar Bar Yaakov is speaking in case of a Korban, or a Bechor Tam, that's going to go on the Mizbeach. Whereas Abaye is speaking about a Bechor Balmum that can be eaten immediately. Mar says, Mi Matzil Achile? Wait a minute, can you really eat it? Even for a Bechor Balmum, for any animal that's born, you're not allowed to shecht an animal on the day that it's born. You have to wait 8 days before you can shecht it. Irrespective of whether it's a Korban or not, you're not allowed to shecht the animal its first 7 days. Why not? Because we're not sure that it's a viable entity. We're not sure that it's a viable entity until it crosses into its 8th day. That's what the Mishnah says. For Adam, it's 30 days to determine that it's a viable entity. For animals, it's 8 days to determine that it's a viable entity. So how can you be shechting a Bechor Balmum on the first day? You can't eat it. So then why is Abaye saying that Mishashen Olad, it's Ra'oi? It's not Ra'oi. You can't eat it those days. Amar says, Kim Le'vei Shekalu Lo Chadasha. We know for sure that it went to full term. So the Gemara has a belief. It's true by human beings as well. It's true by the animals. If they're carried to absolutely full term, we have no question that they're a viable entity. The only question comes up is when aren't carried to full term, then we have to be certain that they are a viable entity. So if the person is certain that this animal went to full term, then on the day that it's born, if it's born with a mum, he could shecht it on that day, because he knows for sure it's a viable entity. In a case where he doesn't know, then you have to wait the 8th day and turn it to there. All right, let's stop over here.